Chapter 20. The Yucatan, Mexico. The pressure against Gamay's ears told her internal depth gauge she was more than 30 feet under the black water. She swam back and forth like an aquarium fish foraging for food, moving higher with each zigzag traverse. Her hands explored the slimy surface of the unseen wall, touch substituting for sight. The previous year she had taken up free diving as a change from scuba. She enjoyed the unfettered feeling of diving without cumbersome scuba gear, and had built up her lung capacity to more than 2 minutes. The limestone face was pitted with ruts, cracks, and small holes. No opening big enough to offer a way out. She surfaced, swam across the pool, and pulled herself up on the edge to rest and catch her breath. She read the disappointment in her face.
Nothing? Mucho nada. Please pardon my Spanish.
She wiped the water from her eyes and looked around the cavern.
You said there are some passages off this chamber.
Yes, I've explored them. They are all dead ends except for one which is blocked by water.
Do you have any idea where the water-filled tunnel leads?
My guess is that it is like the others, ending in small basins that fill or not according to the water table.
What were you looking for in the pool?
Gamay pulled her hair back and wrung out a half pint of water.
I hoped to find an opening that might lead to another cave or come out above the water level. I'll be right back.
She rose and padded to the stairway that led to the cave entrance, quietly climbed the stairs, and disappeared over the top. A few minutes later, she returned.
No chance of sneaking up on the guard, she said, chagrin in her voice. They've blocked up the entrance with boulders. Nothing we couldn't move, but he'd hear us if we tried.
With her hands on her hips, Gamay again inspected their prison, her eyes finally coming to rest on the shaft of light shining through the ceiling hole high above the pool. She followed her gaze.
The ancients dug that hole to lower buckets into the cenote. It saved them going up and down the stairs every time they wanted to whip up a bowl of soup.
It's off-center, she noted.
And indeed, the opening was close to one wall.
See, they had no way of knowing when they dug from above where the exact center of the pool was. It didn't make any difference as long as they were able to lower a rope and fill their buckets.
Gamay walked to the water's edge and peered up at the opening. Vegetation had grown around the hole and worked its way into the chamber, cutting back on the light.
That looks like a vine dangling down.
She squinted at the dome-shaped ceiling.
There may be more than one vine. My eyesight isn't what it used to be.
It was Gamay's turn to squint. The professor was hardly ready for a white cane, she decided. Even with perfect vision, she could barely see the second vine. She lowered her eyes. Much of the wall was in shadow. No reason to assume that it was any different from the underwater wall she had explored.
It's hard to tell in the poor light, but from here that wall looks easier than some of the rock faces I've climbed in West Virginia. Too bad we don't have some crampons and a pickaxe.
He laughed. Heck, I'd even settle for a Swiss Army knife. She stared thoughtfully into space for a moment.
Maybe I have something better than a Swiss Army knife.
He reached under his shirt, slipped a leather thong over his head, and handed it to Gamay. In the dim light, the pendant dangling from the cord looked vaguely like the head of a bird of prey. Gamay cradled the object in her palm. The green eyes sparkled even in the faint cavern light, and the white beak seemed to glow.
Beautiful. What is it?
An amulet. Kukulkan, the storm god. He was the Mayan equivalent of the Aztec's Quetzalcoatl, the feathered serpent. The head is made of copper with jadeite eyes, the beak of quartz. I carry it for good luck and to cut cigars.
The round base fit her hand.
She fingered the short, blunt beak.
"Tell me, Dr. Chi, how hard is limestone?"
"It's made of calcium carbonate and ancient seashells. Hard, but crumbly, as you would expect."
"I was wondering if I could chip hand and footholds in that wall. Enough to get me within reach of those vines."
She wasn't sure what she would do once she escaped from the cave, but she'd think of something.
"It's possible. Quartz is almost as hard as diamond."
"In that case, I'd like to borrow this little bird snake for a while."
"Be my guest," he said. "The power of the gods may be necessary to free us from this dungeon."
Gamay eased back into the water and swam across the pool, then along the wall to a slight bulge in the limestone. Holding on to the ledge with one hand, she reached up and found a hole big enough for her fingers. Using the amulet as a crude adze, she chipped away until the space was big enough to give her fingers a grip. Then she pulled herself up so her knee was balanced on the ledge and chipped another hole somewhat higher. Once she was able to stand to her full height, the work went quicker. She inched up the face of the wall. Clinging to the sheer rock face with her face pressed against the hard surface gave her an intimate knowledge of the limestone's character. As she suspected, the wall was cracked and gouged. She used natural handholds or simply enlarged existing holes. Her hair was covered with powdery white dust. She had to stop occasionally to wipe her nose on her shoulder. One good sneeze would blast her into space. How did Spider-Man make it look so easy? She would have given anything for a couple of Spidey's web-shooting wristbands. Hanging on was tough in itself. What exhausted her the most was having to work with her arm extended over her head. Her shoulder ached, and often she had to let her numbed arm dangle until the blood came back into it. She wondered if she would ever work the kink out of her neck. Halfway up the wall, she looked down. The white smudge of Chi's shirt was barely visible in the gloom. He'd been watching her progress.
"Are you all right, Dr. Gamay?" he said, his voice echoing.
She spit out a powdery gob. Unladylike, but who cares? "Piece of cake." Damn, she wished that yellow-fanged cretin hadn't stolen her wristwatch before stuffing them underground. She had lost track of time. The light coming into the cave was more slanted and dimmer than when she started. The sun must be setting. The tropical night fell with the swiftness of a guillotine blade. Soon the cave would be pitch black. Making a grab for the vines would be tough even with light to see them by. In the darkness, it would be impossible. Dr. Chi must have sensed her doubts. Again, his encouraging voice came from below, calmly telling her that she was doing fine, that she was almost there. And, all at once, she was there, where the ceiling curved into the domed roof. She swiveled her head slowly and saw she was level with the tips of the vines. She moved higher to give herself the margin of error she needed if her leap was to succeed. Now she was under the curving wall. The strain was telling on her tired fingers. She had to move fast or not at all. Another quick glance. The vines hung about 6 feet out from the wall. "Think your moves through, but be fast," she mentally rehearsed. "Spring off the wall, twist her body in midair, grab a vine, and hold on." As she told the professor, "Piece of cake." Her fingers felt as if they were being torn from her hands. She angled her shoulder away from the wall. No more time. Now. She took a deep breath and leaped. She spun around as her body described a parabola, her hands reaching hungrily for the vine. Brushed, then caught it. Dry and brittle. She could tell from the stiffness that it wasn't going to hold her weight. Snap! Grabbed with her free hand for the other vine, felt it break, and fell. Still holding the useless pieces of vegetation, she hit the water. No time to move her feet or head around for a clean dive.
She landed on her side with a sickening splat. When she broke the surface, her left arm and thigh stung from the impact. She bit back the pain and swam in an awkward sidestroke to the edge of the pool. Chi's hand, surprisingly strong, took her by the wrist and helped her out of the water. She sat for a moment, trying to rub the sting out of her thigh.
"Are you all right?"
"I'm fine," she said between gasps. The fall had knocked the air out of her. "Phooey, after all that work." She handed the amulet back to Chi. "Guess the gods had other plans for us."
"From what I saw, they would have had to give you wings."
"I would settle for a parachute." She broke into laughter. "I must have been quite a sight flying through the air holding onto these things." She tossed aside the useless vine fragments clutched in her hand.
"I don't think Tarzan need fear any competition, Dr. Gamay."
"Nor do I. Tell me again about the passageway, the one with water in it." The professor took her hand.
"Come," he said.
The chamber was almost totally in darkness, and Chi could have been leading her into the jaws of hell for all she knew. At one point he stopped, and a second later the flame from his butane lighter flared and threw grotesque shadows on the rough walls.
"Watch your head," Chi cautioned, leading her into a passageway.
"The ceiling gets lower, but we don't have far to go." After a few minutes, the tunnel eventually widened and gave Gamay more headroom. The passageway sloped down slightly, abruptly ending in a blank wall. Below the wall was a small pool.
"The tunnel dips below the water table here," she explained. "Whether it goes up or down after that, I don't know."
"But it's not impossible that this tunnel might lead to the surface."
"See. The ground of the Yucatan is simply a limestone slab honeycombed with natural caverns and tunnels carved out over the eons by water action."
Gamay shivered, not so much from the cold and damp, but at the claustrophobic prospect of swimming into the water-filled earth. She willed her fears away, but some lingered.
"Professor Chi, I know this is a long shot. I'm going to see if this leads anywhere. I can hold my breath for about 2 minutes, which will give me time to swim a fair distance."
"It is very dangerous."
"Not any more so than waiting for those jokers up above to decide when they're going to wall us permanently into this place. After my dentally challenged friend has some fun, of course."
Chi didn't argue. He knew she was right.
"Well," she said, "time for a dip."
She slid into the pool and started a sequence of noisy hyperventilation exercises to fill her lungs with oxygen. When she had absorbed air to the point of dizziness, she ducked underwater and scoped out the tunnel opening. She rose to the surface and reported her find to Chi.
"It angles down, but I don't know how far it goes."
He nodded.
"Make sure you allow enough air to return."
Chi leaned over and handed her his butane lighter.
"You may need this where you're going."
Gamay was already into her deep breathing exercises, so she tucked the lighter into her shorts, gave him the okay sign, and dove into the blackness. Counting seconds off in her head, 1 chimpanzee, 2 chimpanzee, like a child estimating the closeness of lightning, she swam just below the ceiling. She had decided to push herself to the limit. Swimming forward for nearly 2 minutes, she could cover 30 or 40 yards before having to turn around for a lung-bursting dash back. As it turned out, she didn't have to burst her lungs at all. She was barely past her 60th chimpanzee when the ceiling angled up sharply and her extended hand broke out of the water, followed an instant later by her head. She exhaled and took a tentative breath. The air was musty, but good. Gamay couldn't believe her good luck. About time they got a break. The tunnel must dip, then come up like the water seal trap under a kitchen sink. She was familiar with plumbing from the almost constant renovation work around her Georgetown house. She laughed at the thought of swimming in an oversized drain, but her mirth was also prompted by relief. The sound of her voice echoed in the darkness, quickly sobering her with the reminder that she wasn't out of this mess yet. Not by a long shot. She dug Chi's lighter out of her pocket and held it high, Statue of Liberty fashion. After several tries, the lighter flint sparked and the flame hissed into life. Treading water, Gamay pirouetted and saw that she was at the bottom of a steep-sided circular hole. She sidestroked around the perimeter, thinking this is what it must feel like to be a kitten down a well. How on earth would she climb these sides? She didn't relish a repeat performance of her Icarus-like plunge into the cenote. She floated over to a shelf-like water-level protuberance and raised the lighter. There was another ledge a short distance above the first. Her heart raced with excitement. Steps! There might be a way out of this pit after all. Losing no time, she pulled herself out of the water and climbed the steps that spiraled around the inside of the stone cylinder. Soon she was over the rim of the well. Using the lighter again, she explored her surroundings. She was in a small cave. Her eye fell on the narrow furrow in the stone floor, and she followed it to a low-ceiling passageway. She held the lighter close to the opening and watched the flame flutter. Air was blowing through, stale and warm, but still air. Within seconds, she was back in the well. She hyperventilated a few times, then swam back the way she had come. Surfacing, she blurted, "I think I found a way out." The professor's voice answered in the hollow darkness. "Dr. Gamay, I was afraid you were gone for good. So much time had passed." "Sorry to keep you waiting. Wait till I show you what I found. Can you swim?" "I used to do laps every day in the Harvard pool." He paused. "How long will I have to hold my breath?" "Just the other side of the wall. You can do it." They found each other's hand, and she splashed into the basin. With their heads close together, Gamay instructed him in breathing exercises. Between breaths, he said, "I wish now my ancestors were Incan rather than Mayan." "Pardon?" "Large lung capacity from the thin mountain air. I'm basically a flatlander." "You'll do fine, even for a flatlander. Ready?" "I'd prefer to wait until I grow gills, but since that's not possible, vamonos." He squeezed her hand in signal. Gamay sank beneath the surface, quickly found the continuation of the tunnel, and practically yanked the professor through the passageway. The journey took less than half the time of her earlier trip, but the professor was huffing and puffing when they surfaced, and she was glad the distance wasn't any greater. She flicked the lighter. The professor's head bobbed a few feet away. He was sucking in big gulps of air. Somehow he had managed to keep the baseball cap on his head. "Steps are over here," Gamay said, towing him behind her. She helped him to the top of the well. Looking around, Chi said, "My guess is that the inhabitants of the city used this well as an emergency supply when the cenote and the river dried up after the rainy season." Chi got down on his knees and peered into the well. "When the water was high, they could simply dip into it with their vessels. When the level dropped completely out of their reach, they carved the steps. Like that coffee commercial. Good to the last drop." He stood and traced the track in the floor. "The marks of many feet," he said in wonder. Gamay was as interested in ancient civilizations as Chi, but the lighter flame was growing smaller and dimmer. When she pointed this out to the professor, he picked up several pieces of charred bark from the floor and wove them into a serviceable torch that cast off smoky flames. "Castor oil plant," he explained. Back on his dry land element, he took the lead. "Well, Dorothy, shall we follow the yellow brick road?" he said with an airy wave of the torch. Glancing back to make sure Gamay was behind him, Chi ducked through the opening in the wall and into a rough tunnel. Chi's head comfortably cleared the low soot-encrusted ceiling, but Gamay had to bend over as she ascended the crooked and steeply pitched passageway. After only a few minutes, the tunnel ended abruptly at the bottom of a narrow shaft. Gamay could stand again. A crude ladder led up the shaft. Chi tested the rungs, pronounced the ladder rickety but safe, and climbed to the top of the shaft, where he knelt at the rim and held the torch as a beacon for Gamay. The ladder miraculously held, and Gamay joined him at the opening of another passageway. This one led to a cavern about twice the size of the cave with the well in it. And like that chamber, there was only one way out. The tunnel was about a yard wide and slightly more than that tall. They navigated the twists and turns of the gradually ascending passageway on their hands and knees. The enclosed space would have been hot and stifling even without the smoke and heat from the torch, and at times Gamay found it hard to breathe. It was difficult to tell length and direction, but she guessed that the tunnel ran for about 60 feet, doubling back on itself at one point. She had been crawling with her head down, glancing upward from time to time to make sure she didn't get too close to Chi, although that was unlikely. He scuttled through the tunnels like a mole rat. The torchlight vanished unexpectedly, and she bumped into the professor's legs. She stood to see what the holdup was. "Wait," Chi said, and put his arm back for emphasis. He seemed frozen in place. In the torch's light, Gamay quickly saw why. The tunnel had ended at a ledge overlooking a yawning chasm. 3 logs had been laid across the abyss. The early engineers who built the span had reinforced it with cross supports and thoughtfully attached a pole for a railing on one side. "I'll go first," Chi said. Gingerly he put his weight on a log, and when it held he pressed forward. A quick few steps, and he was across. "It's not exactly the Golden Gate," he said apologetically, "but it seems to be fine." The word "seems" hung in the air and overshadowed the rest of the reassuring sentence. Gamay balefully eyed the crude span. She really didn't have any choice. Reassuring herself that she only weighed 35 pounds more than the professor, she tripped across the bridge like a high-wire walker. It was steadier than she anticipated, and the rough logs didn't roll. Still, she was glad when she reached Chi's outstretched hand and put her foot back on solid rock. "Well done," he said, guiding her to another shaft leading upward. Gamay almost panicked when she didn't see a ladder, but Chi pointed out the steps worn into the wet and slippery rock. They were barely big enough for her toes and fingers, and she had to use every bit of rock-climbing muscle and skill. The infrastructure around here was made for slightly built Mayans, not tall Anglos, she grumbled to herself. At the top of the shaft was another low tunnel. Gamay's throat felt like the Sahara Desert on a hot day. Her climbing, swimming, and crawling exertions were catching up with her. Her eyes stung from cinders, and her knees were raw from crawling. At one point, she and the professor had to squeeze through broken rock. Gamay might have stopped for good had it not been for an exultant shout from the professor. "Dr. Gamay, we're out!" Seconds later, they stood in a chamber so large the light from the torch wasn't bright enough to illuminate the high ceiling. She rubbed the soot from her eyes. Were those columns? She borrowed the torch, only to laugh softly when the light fell not on columns, but on huge stalactites. The cavern was irregularly circular. Passages branched off from the chamber. One opening was semicircular in shape,
and twice as tall as a man. In contrast to the rough opening they had just come through, the portals were smooth and even, the surface of the floor unexpectedly flat.
"You could drive a car through this," Gamay exclaimed.
"There are legends of underground highways that ran between villages. I always thought they were simply exaggerations, that some of the locals had seen natural tunnels and mistaken them for artificial ones. But this?"
They were brought to a halt where a section of fallen roof blocked the way, and turned back to the main chamber, stopping first to explore a side passage. They entered a miniature plaza, whose rectangular tiled floor was surrounded by real columns, not stalactites. The vaulted ceiling was smoothed and plastered, as was the wall, which was adorned with murals of red figures in profile.
"Incredible," Gamay said. "Is this some sort of underground temple?"
Chi walked along the walls, squinting at the figures whose paint seemed as fresh as if it had been applied the day before.
"The figures are Mayan, but then again they are not," the professor whispered.
Pictured was a procession of profiled figures carrying goods on shoulders and heads. Vases, baskets of bread, gold containers, odd shapes that could have been ingots.
"The boats again."
Gamay pointed out merchant ships and war vessels, similar to those carved into the walls of the structure Chi showed her earlier. A whole story unfolded as they walked along the walls. Ships coming in, unloading, the goods being taken off in procession. Even a painting of a man holding a list, obviously a teller. Soldiers standing guard. It was an ancient documentary of some great event or events. Their attention turned to the center of the room and a large round stone pedestal supported by four heavy columnar legs. On the table was a cut box of purplish crystal-specked stone, similar in appearance to the temple structures on the summits of Mayan pyramids. Gamay bent low and looked through the square opening in the side of the box.
"There's something inside," she said.
She reached in with trembling fingers, lifted out the object, and set it on the mirrored surface of the table. Chi had found more castor branches to replenish the torch, and it burned brighter than ever. The device, for that is surely what it was, consisted of a boxy wood housing inset with a metal wheel, which in turn was strengthened with cross braces. Within the wheel was a large gear that apparently rotated around a central axle, and meshed with its teeth were several smaller gears.
"What is it?" Gamay said.
"A machine of sorts.
It looks like... No, it can't be."
"Don't keep me in the dark, Dr. Gamay."
"Well, it resembles something I've seen before. An artifact taken off an ancient shipwreck, made of bronze as this appears to be, but terribly corroded.
It was thought to be an astrolabe, a navigational device to determine the attitude of the sun and stars. Someone did a gamma radiograph. They found gear ratios that related to astronomical and calendar data. It was far more complex than a simple astrolabe. There were 30 gears, all enmeshed, even a differential gear. It was basically a computer."
"A computer? Where did you see it?"
She paused.
"At the National Museum in Athens."
Chi stared at the machine.
"Impossible."
"Professor, could you give me a little more light here, where these scratchings are?" Chi brought the torch so close the flames almost singed Gamay's hair. But she didn't care.
"I don't know much about Mayan writing, but this isn't it."
It was Chi's turn to examine the inscription.
"Impossible," he repeated, but with less conviction.
Gamay looked around the chamber.
This whole thing, this cloistered basilica, your underground freeway, they're all impossible, too. We must get this analyzed as soon as we can. I'm with you on that one. There's a slight problem. Oh, yes, she said, remembering where they were. But I think we're almost out of the caves. Gamay nodded. I felt the fresh air, too. Chi tied the front of his shirt into a makeshift sack to carry the artifact, and they headed back to explore the main chamber. An enormous wooden ladder, almost perpendicular in its steepness, soared into the darkness above. The ladder was made of bark-covered saplings, logs, really, about as thick as a Mayan's thigh and approximately 12 feet wide. The saplings were lashed to tree trunks that were braced horizontally at right angles against the face of the rock. Running up the center of the ladder was a partition that acted as a hand railing. The ladder was an impressive engineering feat, but time had taken its toll. Some of the round steps had slipped and hung at angles. In places, supports had snapped, and the ladder sagged. The wood seemed sturdy enough to Gamay. The fact that the steps and braces were lashed together with vines bothered her. In her sorry experience, vines dried, cracked, and broke. Her confidence was not inspired when the bottom step detached itself from the ladder as she put her weight on it. Chi craned his neck toward the invisible summit of the ladder. "We'll have to approach this scientifically," he said, examining the construction. "This whole thing could fall at any moment. The support up the middle may give it some stability. It would be something to hang on to. Maybe you should go first. If it holds for you, there should be no problem with me." Gamay appreciated Chi's gesture, although she didn't agree with it. "Your chivalry may be misplaced, Dr. Chi. Your chances of making it to the top are better than mine. If I go first and the ladder breaks, you'll never get out of here. On the other hand, the ladder could break under my weight, and we'd both be out of luck." "Stubborn Mayan. Okay, I promise to go on a diet later." Gamay stepped carefully over the bottom rung to the second sapling and gradually put her weight on it. The rung held. Reaching up for higher rungs so as to spread her weight, she began to climb. She purposely avoided looking at the vines, fearing that they might part from the pressure of her glance. About 6 rungs up, she stopped. "The air is coming down the ladder," she said brightly. "Once we're at the top, we should be home free." She took another step. The ties snapped on one side, and the end of the sapling came free to hang at a slight angle. Gamay froze, afraid to breathe. Nothing else fell. As slowly and deliberately as a tree sloth, she resumed her climb. The ties held until she got midway, where the ladder sagged, putting further stress on the suspension. Another log snapped free and dangled off to one side. One horizontal support came completely loose and crashed to the cave floor. She was sure the ladder was about to collapse, yet it stayed intact. When the swaying stopped, she resumed her climb. She could have been on the ladder 15 minutes or 15 hours. It was hard to tell. But she made steady progress without mishap until she was only a few rungs from the top. "Good God," she thought, looking down. "The ladder must be almost 90 feet high." She had left the light from Chi's torch behind long ago. From where she was perched, it looked like a distant star. Gamay reached up and, to her great relief, felt stone instead of tree bark. Even more carefully than before, not wanting to kick a log free, she slithered over the rim to safety. She lay on her back and offered thanks to the Mayan ladder builders, then rolled over on her stomach and called softly down to Chi. The torch waved back and forth and went out. Chi was on his way up and would need both hands free. She didn't really think he'd have any problem until she heard the noise. Clunk. Then clunkety-clunk. In her mind's eye, she could see the thick, log-like saplings break loose and tumble to the bottom of the ladder. She expected that would be the end of it. But then she began to hear more dull clunks. A terrifying sound, because it indicated that the incident hadn't ended with one log. A chain reaction was underway. If she had weakened the vines with her weight, it would require only a slight pressure to snap the supports and send the rungs crashing to the floor. More thumps and clunks echoed in the darkness. The noise grew louder. It was evident from the racket that, rung by rung, the ladder was collapsing. She lit the cigarette lighter and held it over the edge. Maybe the tiny flame would show Chi how close he was to the top. That is, if he weren't buried under a massive log pile. Chi's voice called out. Hard to tell against the racket how far away. Your hand! She reached over the rim and shouted encouragement. Something brushed her fingers. She had no idea he was that close. Grab hold! She yelled. Again she felt a touch, fingers clawing, finding her slim wrist and locking on, her hand doing the same with his wrist. She rolled over, using the leverage provided by her body, pulling Chi up to where he could grab the edge with his free hand. Something was wrong. Wait!
Wait for what?
Chi was fumbling. Finally, after agonizing moments when she thought she was going to lose him, Chi gripped her forearm with both hands and got first one leg, then the other, onto solid rock. A choking cloud of dust rose from the cave. It cleared several minutes later, and they peered over the precipice. Nothing was visible in the inky pit.
The ladder collapsed below me when I was about halfway up, Chi said. I was fine as long as I kept ahead of the falling logs, but they started to catch up. It was like climbing a down escalator.
Why did you tell me to wait? He patted the front of his shirt.
The knot was coming loose. I was afraid I'd lose the artifact.
Chi looked with wonder over the edge.
They don't make ladders the way they used to.
Game broke into a gale of laughter.
No, I guess they don't.
Cooled by a stream of fresh air, they dusted themselves off and followed the apparent source of the breeze, which got stronger as they headed along a well-beaten path through a large winding tunnel. The buzz of insects grew louder. They climbed a short flight of stairs and stepped through a narrow opening into the damp, warm night. Game drew air deep into her lungs and let it out, expelling the dirt and dust. The moonlight cast the old city plaza with its strange, slumbering mounds in a pewter light. With Chi leading, they set off to work their way toward the path that would take them to where they left the Humvee. Weeks seemed to have gone by since they had arrived here. The pair moved cautiously from mound to mound. They were near the edge of the woods when they saw what looked like a convention of fireflies. Only these pinpoints were not blinking on and off. They were steady, fanning out across the old city plaza. Game and Chi realized simultaneously that their escape had been discovered, and that the threesome who had imprisoned them had been joined by others. They began to run. A gravelly voice growled in Spanish, and a blinding light flashed in their eyes. Then they heard a nasty laugh that told Game she had been reunited with her old friend Yellow Teeth. He sounded highly pleased with himself. He ran the beam slowly down the front of Game's body, letting it linger on selected spots, before bringing it back to the leveled barrels of the professor's shotgun, which he held at waist level. Then he yelled in Spanish to attract the attention of his confederates. There was a shouted answer, and beams of light began to move their way. Game couldn't believe it. After all they'd gone through, crawling through the ground like moles, only to be caught within seconds like game panicked by a line of beaters. She was ready simply to walk up to the bastard and twist the gun out of his hands. She must have sensed her impetuous mood.
"Do as he says. Don't worry."
She stepped off to one side and went along a path. Yellowteeth barked a command. The professor ignored him and kept walking at a slow, steady pace. Yellowteeth hesitated. This wasn't supposed to happen. People were supposed to jump to his order when he waved a gun around. With a quick glance at Gamay to make sure she was sufficiently cowed to remain where she was, he started after Chi, yelling in Spanish. Chi stopped, but not before he stepped off the path into the grass, where he got down on his knees in a begging position, arms held high in the air. Well, this was more like it. Weakness was like fresh blood to a hungry animal. With a snarl, Yellowteeth lunged through the grass, bringing the gun up so he could crush Chi's skull with the butt. Then he vanished. The flashlight sailed into the air, describing a long arc before it landed in the grass. There was a yelp of surprise, a loud thud, silence. Chi retrieved the flashlight and directed the beam straight down. When Gamay approached, he warned, "Be careful. There's another hole just to your right." Yellowteeth had fallen through a circular hole and now lay at the bottom of a dome-shaped chamber with white plaster walls. "Cisterns," she said. "You saw how hard it was to get a drink around here. The city people used to store their water in these things. I've marked them wherever I can. I guess he didn't see this." He fingered a thin orange ribbon tied to a bush. "Are you going to just leave him?" Chi looked off to where the fireflies were getting closer. "We don't have much choice. You don't really care, do you?" Gamay thought about the long, hard climb from the cenote. "I wouldn't mind getting my watch back. But to be perfectly honest, no, I don't give a damn. See how he likes being stuck in a gopher hole. We'll have to go toward the river. It's the only way." They sprinted for the woods. They'd been spotted. Gunfire shattered the night. They ran faster.